TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my Steam co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, in case you get a little bit hungry, please do not eat the Lysarian larvae from Phlox's menagerie. He's going to need that.
Chris, I already did, unfortunately. And, my name is not Matthew. It's Matthew, so with a lot more A's in there, that's how you can tell us apart. So
I feel like that was an episode of News Radio where Matthew became Matthew.
Actually, it's a funny reference to the original Thrawn trilogy from Star Wars, where clone of Luke is called Luke. Two U's, not just one. So very different, very, very different. Don't get them confused. So I'm Matthew. So, yes.
So if things had gone differently in this episode of Star Trek, we could have gotten to Pol.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. If she had been the one we needed to clone. So.
All right, everyone, we're going to talk about this episode. It's episode 10 of season 3, Similitude, as we continue our 20th anniversary rewatch. And here's a quick rundown of the story. Sexy time with T'Pol turns into a brainstorming session for Trip Tucker, but the neuropressure-induced euphoria won't last long. When he attempts to pull off his plan to improve engine performance, he is critically injured. Without Trip, the Enterprise has little chance of successfully completing its mission, so Dr. Phlox proposes a bold resurrection plan, growing a symbiont to harvest its tissue. As the clone rapidly matures from silent embryo to southern drawl, it experiences a rapid ride through Trip's life, putting Archer, T'Pol, and others in a difficult position. So Matthew, I remember how it began. They produced a carbon copy man, born in a science lab late one night, without a mother or a father, just a test tube and a womb with a view. You know what song that's from, right?
Yes, but I was also thinking of carbon copy man. That's why, but the problem is that carbon copy men, they smudge, that's why America rejected them.
Oh, right. So, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't trust it.
All right. So carbon copy man and Weird Al aside, what are your first thoughts on this episode?
I don't want to get ahead of myself in the sense of where we are on to the journey, but this is what the episode of Tuvix wanted to be and wasn't, I don't think. And every time I rewatch this episode, I am struck by the importance that just one person can make. And that's really what this story is about, right? That Trip Tucker is irreplaceable in this mission and for the survival of the human race. Mm-hmm. And that is something to which I really love about this episode, is that we are talking about the way in which one person can make the ultimate difference, right? We think about that throughout history. All of the different people that are well known in history, good, bad, and ugly, but specifically those who did something heroic or if they hadn't been there, what would have happened if instead of Winston Churchill, Neville Chamberlain had been the prime minister all throughout World War II? How different would things have gone, right? So that's basically what this whole episode is talking about, is that this really does come down to the importance that one person can make, and that without them, things could actually not turn out the way we want them to. And mm-hmm. so I think it's a hallmark of the episode too, that it doesn't shy away from all of the emotions. It doesn't shy away from all of the ways in which each individual life touches people, right? Mm-hmm. Because the difference between Sim and between Trip is noticeable. They are not the same person, even though mm-hmm. they have very similar experiences. There is a whole realm of experience that Sim gets that Trip, of course, will never have. And mm-hmm. and so I think that was the other thing that I thought was really beautiful about the episode. So all in all, I mean, you know, I'm not here to like wrap up the episode already, but I think this is just an incredibly strong episode. Mm-hmm. And it's one that I think tackles many of the same type of questions that Tuvix did. But I think in a way that at least the resolution is much more enjoyable to watch. Mm-hmm. And I think the execution on it, to me, I like it so much more. So what about mm-hmm. you, Chris?
Right. Well, I think those are interesting and good points that you made, because some people ask the question about this episode of why is Trip the only engineer on the ship who could help them complete their mission in the Expanse? So we'll talk about that in a second. My just basic first thoughts on it are, you know, pretty much what you echoed. I always thought it was a strong episode because of the position that it put Archer in, which we can talk mm-hmm. about some more as well. And also how it gave everyone in the crew something to do, while it also really shined a light on Trip. And like you said, not just his role as the engineer, but the impact that he had as a person on his crewmates. So sticking with Trip then, like I was just saying, people have sometimes asked, why would Starfleet send this ship out on such a critical mission without any kind of backup? So Archer's basic position here is that if we don't have Trip, we can't complete the mission. Now, you would expect that there would be some sort of redundancy in place, that there would be other engineers who could step in if he were to die, because there's a very good chance that something's going to happen to people in key roles during this mission. Now, that's if you're viewing it from like a real world logical standpoint and planning standpoint, that would make sense. But I think what you say is more important when you're watching the episode, because, you know, sure, military planners and leaders aren't going to send a crew out without any kind of backup, but that kind of misses the whole point of the episode, of exploring Trip's character and his importance to his crewmates, and also to T'Pol, which is another thing we'll touch on towards the end. But what do you think about that idea, though, that it might be too much on one man's shoulders within the context of the Star Trek mission, that the Enterprise is out there and they're so mm-hmm. reliant on Trip that Archer is willing to take this extreme measure to save him?
Well, I think that if people are having that reaction, then they forget an episode like First Flight, where mm-hmm. we see how pivotal Trip is just to the Warp 5 engine program itself. I mean, mm-hmm. without him, it may never have gotten off the ground in time for them even to be here in the first place. Mm-hmm. I think the show does a pretty good job of helping us see that the people that are on this ship are the best people for the job. Nobody else can do what Hoshi does on Earth. Mm-hmm. Like, she's one in 8 billion people.
Yeah,
on Earth that can do what she does, right?
Yeah.
So I think, and part of that is because we're so new in this expanse of space, pun intended. Mm-hmm. And so I think that when we talk about the idea, you know, could there have been redundancies? would they have sent them alone? They only have one Warp 5 ship at this point. Mm-hmm. Columbia isn't finished being built. You know, she's in dry dock still being put together. And mm-hmm. because, you know, the Vulcans had not given us any more help, we're in a space where this is what we've got to work with, right? And nobody else wants to help us in this. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, there will be a point in this season where there do come some people along the road to help us. And we're very thankful that it was a long road to get them from there to here. But right now, Enterprise is it. And mm-hmm. so to me, I think that when people ask that question, I think they're kind of just missing the point of the show. And they're also missing that specialization aspect of these are the very first specialists in their field, right? To really be able to go out there and do these things. Starfleet Academy, as we know it, doesn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. And Earth really is doing a lot of this on its own. And yeah. so, and because nobody else has these experiences with these engines specifically that Trip does, yes, it comes down to one man. Are there other people in the engineering section who are good at their jobs and might be able to fill in to keep the ship going on a normal mission? Yes. But is there anybody who can think outside the box the way Trip does? Because he knows this engine inside and out. He knows it down to the last stem bolt.
Mm-hmm.
No. And so I do think that that's the thing where I don't know. You know, if somebody's really questioning, it seems a little bit strange to me just because I don't know how you can question with. Yeah.
Well, it's classic Star Trek fandom nitpicking, Matthew.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You know how
yeah.
it is. So, okay, well, so Archer makes the decision that we can't lose Trip, and Dr. Phlox has this idea of using this thing that he conveniently has on the shelf, the Lissarian desert larva, which just creates a clone of whatever DNA you put into it. What's interesting in this story, and situation plays a role in it, but compared with some of the narratives that we would typically get in Star Trek, I would say particularly on The Next Generation, where something like this is concerned, Archer makes a very quick decision of, let's do it. Like, let's clone Trip. Now, at the time that this was written, of course, there was discussion, and there continues to be discussion today, but the idea of, you know, harvesting tissue or stem cells or other biological parts from one person to use to help heal someone else, or even from one person's own body to help them to recover from something. I even had a case earlier this year myself at the doctor where the doctor was suggesting of taking cells from my arm to re-inject as a treatment for torn tissue that I had. So, you know, this kind of stuff plays out, and depending on the type of treatment, it can sometimes be controversial and sometimes it's not. But I felt like part of the story to me has always been the controversial side of the ethics of creating a living being or taking parts from another living being to perform some kind of medical treatments. But in this situation that they're in, Archer feels like he doesn't really have a choice. Like, they've just got to do it. And probably jumps to that conclusion without really thinking through the ramifications of what it might mean for the clone. So what are your thoughts on that aspect of the story?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most interesting thing about this. You know, there's a movie that came out years ago, the idea of the island, I think it was mm-hmm. a Michael Bay film, where, mm-hmm. you know, these people realize that they're being grown as mm-hmm. clones mm-hmm. For other people to be able to utilize when they need body parts, right? And mm-hmm. right. I think that is fascinating, right? And in some ways, you know, I think that is much different from the information that we get from Phlox on his thought process of how this is going to work, right? And the lifespan and everything makes this a much more interesting discussion and all of that. And so what I really do love is that there's a complete nuance here to this, and the fact that, you know, basically around the age that Sim would be when he's going to die is the same age that we would need, you know, him to die anyway. And mm-hmm. so to be able to take what is needed to save Trip. Also, beforehand, you had Phlox saying, yeah, this isn't going to hurt him at all. This, in fact, he'll just be able to pass away like he always would, you know, mm-hmm. so he'll get to live the whole life. Mm-hmm. And so I think all of that is, that's the stuff that I think makes Archer's decision easier in this, mm-hmm. in that sense, because he's not just creating a life that he is going to have to intentionally kill, right? He is just creating this life, and it will be able to live out its natural span of life and mm-hmm. have no harm come to it. At least mm-hmm. that's what he is told before this
right,
happens.
Right, up front. Right, right.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think the idea of the technology of even what they could do with, you know, cloning and the thought process of whether or not you could, you know, clone certain parts of the human body and things for people without having to create an entire person, you know, is that going to be a possibility in the future? I don't know. When it comes to something like the brain, right? I don't think that'll be ever anything somebody could completely clone.
Right.
And yeah. have work like that. So this technology and this organism that can fully mimic is just fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And so that's... I really do like the way in which, though, that this makes somebody like Archer have to wrestle with the morality of it. And in the end, you know, he has to kind of come to the Vulcan axiom, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, because his species could literally
right.
end.
Yeah.
And when you're faced with that kind of question, the sheer size of the problem makes the choices very, very thin, you know. Mm-hmm. So I actually really love that. So
yeah, I also wonder how quickly he would have made the decision if he had known how everything was going to play out, right? I'm not sure what Phlox had ever cloned before using one of these larvae. I don't get the feeling that Phlox anticipated the extent to which Sim would become a full person and have his own thoughts and his own feelings.
Right.
And
yes.
The other thing, too, is if it had been... I don't know how this would have played out in the story, but let's just suppose maybe it was just a different crew member, but then the stakes wouldn't have been as high. But I think the fact that it is Trip... And as Sim grows up and he really starts to look like Trip and speak like Trip, the impact that those interactions have on the other members of the crew and particularly on T'Pol really complicate the whole plan and the whole situation for what they're trying to achieve. And of course, that's, you know, the heart of the story. That's what makes
right.
the story good. But if you're putting yourself in their shoes, if you were on this mission in real life, you know, that's something that I think was not anticipated. Mm-hmm. It almost felt like the original idea was we'll clone him and we'll just raise him here in sick bay, and then we'll harvest the tissue and then he'll naturally die after a couple of weeks.
Right.
And, you know, there won't really be any impact on him because he won't really be aware of the wider world and everything, but because he becomes so involved in the operations of the ship, you know, he has his own life. And then throwing that twist in of there might be a way to allow him to continue living then puts Archer in the position of having to essentially decide whether he's going to kill him or not. Now, we don't know for sure that it would have worked, but it's no longer a simple plan for Archer anymore. Right. He has to make the decision to terminate the life of this sentient being that they have created.
Well, and I think that the beauty of this whole thing to me is the question that you're facing actually teaches us something about the character of Trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Trip, because he's the one, when we're really faced with the idea that Trip would run away and wouldn't do the right thing and wouldn't be willing to sacrifice himself, I think that's the thing about this that also is what elevates it above the Tuvix episode, because this really isn't a story about one being deserving life over another. It's about, in the end, sacrificial love. Would I be willing to sacrifice myself for the betterment of others? Mm-hmm. And
especially people that you care about, not just the general population.
Exactly. Right? And the beauty is in this, right? When Sim says it was my sister just as much as it was Tripp's, mm-hmm. Paul is the same person he's also interested in, right? And he doesn't even know if it's because of him or if it's because of Trip, and it's really weird. But the relationship he has with Archer and Phlox and all of these people, right? The beauty is that he has Trip's relationship with them, but he also has his own relationship with them. And you put that together, and it makes complete sense that the character of Sim, like Trip, is somebody who's going to be willing to do whatever it takes to save those people that he loves and that he cares about, and even people he doesn't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this really kind of comes down to that whole band of brothers mentality. When you're in the trenches, you're doing it for the guys on your shoulder. It's not about the bigger mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly where Sim, I think, finds himself here. He's doing it for those people that he has these experiences from Trip from, but also now he has his own experiences from. And you combine both of those, and they lead him to do only one thing. There's only one answer to this question, and that's, if I can't live, and there's not, and really it comes down to, the chance of me living is so slim, but the chance of him living are basically 100%,
mm-hmm.
it's worth it. Because then that means everybody I care about can live forever, or you mm-hmm. know, live much longer too. So I think there's just so many great little nuances here, but really more than the moral nuances in the episode, it's really an episode about character, and it teaches mm-hmm. us a lot about the unspokens that Trip has in his life, especially with T'Pol, mm-hmm. but it also teaches us about just the way in which he feels about life in general. So it's just, to me, one of the beauties of this episode, and I think why it really works.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just mentioned T'Pol, so I'll just throw this in right now. The other thing that I've heard people talk about sometimes is that they feel that the ending is meaningless when T'Pol kisses Sim, because Sim's going to be gone, so doesn't matter. He's not going to remember it. Trip won't know about it and all. But I think that's the wrong way of looking at that situation. It clearly has impact on T'Pol, not only in the moment, but I think it also influences the path for the relationship that she'll have with Trip in the future.
Absolutely.
Because she remembers the whole experience. And even when she kisses Sim, I feel like it's more about her than it is about him, because she's coming to the realization. If you go back to the beginning of the episode, right, when mm-hmm. Trip and T'Pol are together, I think she's coming to the realization that she actually does have these feelings for Trip. And being able to see him in this different situation through Sim adds to that and makes that clearer for her.
Yeah, no, I agree. I couldn't have said it better myself, and that's exactly what I was also thinking of when it comes to the storyline for T'Pol. I mean, because Sim knows he doesn't have long, right? He's willing to say the silent thing out loud that Trip hasn't had the guts basically to say yet.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's a beautiful thing then for the series because of where it leads these characters, right? You lead them then towards this relationship, and it's going to be a difficult one because, you know, it's the first time that we really see a human and a Vulcan trying to navigate that relational space and in the terms of romance. And yet, I think, you know, they just do such a great job with it. And that's, again, that's one of those things that I think makes this episode special for me because I always enjoyed their relationship. I always thought it was really one of the best parts of the series. And, you know, honestly, one of the things that I think was kind of, you know, hijacked and taken away from fans, you know, with the final episode because it took away something that people gravitated towards in the series the same way people did with Worf and Jadzia. You know, that was impacted by Terry Farrell deciding to leave Deep Space Nine. But this just got impacted by, I think, a bad story decision to which, you know, I mean, if you listen to the latest Decon Chamber where Berman and Braga are actually on the episode, they're like, why did we decide to kill Trip? You know, they couldn't even really remember why they decided to do it. And, you know, Connor has no problem with it, but, you know, I think the rest of the fans did. And so, but this is really allows that relationship to take the next step as we move forward the next few episodes. So, it's such a great thing about this episode, and it's so much fun to just kind of go back and watch. And I just, you know, rewatching it, I was also really struck by how this is, the season continues to kind of ramp up the tension for Archer and continue to, it's like he's been put into a vice that's slowly being, you know, tightened. And this is just one more tightening of that vice for him. And I think it's one of those things where it's like really well done because not only has he had the experience of having all these people die on Earth, right? That he's now responsible for saving the rest of them. He knows people who have been affected by this personally, but this is a place where his best friend.
Yeah, and that's a factor as well.
You know, and so I think that there's something about that I'm just really loving about the season and where this episode comes in the season. As again, we are just turning that vice just a little bit more on Archer, creating that pressure as he's feeling it more and more. And then it's something beautiful, of course, that we kind of have to work on throughout the end of this season and all the way out, you know, through, you know, season four, where we don't deny the trauma then that this man experiences having the weight of an entire planet's survival on his shoulders. Because really, it's not so much that this all falls on Trip's shoulders. It really falls on Archer's shoulders. And he is the one who's having to bear it all because he is the one that has to make the decisions that Sisko before him, you know, would say, and not really before him, but you know what I mean, but I can live with it.
Well, he might have said it before him. You know, he is in the timeless void with the prophets now. So
this is true. This is true. You're right.
Where on the timeline that might fall. The fact that Trip is essentially Archer's best friend, I do think is a factor in the decision, but I don't think it's a factor in the decision to the point where Archer decided to create the clone to save Trip because of that relationship. I think Archer would have made that decision regardless because of the importance of the engineer to the crew, but also would have made a different decision if that was the best thing for the mission as well. I think that his focus very much is on just making sure the mission is successful.
Yeah, I agree.
Talking about the moral quagmire part, I want to just go back because you mentioned Tuvix a few times here. And over the past year, it became a fashionable trend in social media to call out Janeway over the Tuvix murder. I'm doing an air quotes here, as so many fans, you know, continue after all these years to make that a big issue for them with that episode. But it does make sense to contrast these two episodes because there are similar situations, but they are different stories. And here, the decision to, I suppose the idea here would be you find a way to bring Trip back, but you also allow Sim to continue living if it were possible. So you would have two Trips. I guess that would right. be the path that some people might want. Whereas with Tuvix, you either have to let the new being continue to live as a fused being of Tuvok and Neelix, or you have to kill one of them to bring back the other one.
Right.
And another big difference between, well, there are a few big differences between these episodes, but one is that in Tuvix, they are fused due to an accident, whereas here, Archer makes the decision to create the clone for a specific purpose, and the parameters of that change over time, whereas, you know, Janeway's faced with this question of simply, do I try to split them back apart so that we can have them, or do I need to choose between one of them if it's not possible to get them both apart, or do I let this new being that's been created continue on? Which is an interesting question, given that the whole premise of Star Trek is to seek out new life, right? Because Tuvix is certainly a new life form. But in the case of Tuvix, you could say Neelix is super important to the mission, but obviously Tuvok is more critical than Neelix is back in the kitchen and just being the guide around the area. And if they're fused, all of his knowledge is still there, right? Still there. So you could still complete right. your mission if the fused Tuvix being were there. But here the situation is different because what Archer has come to believe is that they cannot complete the mission if they don't have the actual Trip Tucker there.
Well, and the odds of Sim surviving are so minuscule that, you know, you have to go with the odds at that. And, you know, because the odds of him surviving impact the odds of Earth surviving and humanity in general surviving. And humanity cannot be sacrificed for itself for just one person, you know. Mm-hmm. The only person who can do that is Jesus, and Trip ain't Jesus. So, and neither is Sim. So, I mean, that's where we end up, you know. And I think, yeah, it'll be interesting when we get a chance to talk about Tuvix on To the Journey.
That will be,
so we'll
for
get
sure.
there at some point. But
yeah. So, what do we think about Sim's ultimate decision? And you touched on it a little bit earlier about obviously Trip isn't going to run away from something. And so if Sim has Trip's memories, which is a kind of scientifically dubious part of this episode of why does Sim have specific memories of Trip's as he grows up just because he's based on DNA taken from Trip. But, you know, to create a narrative, it works. And so it not only, I think, ultimately allows Sim to make the decision that he makes, but it also makes that decision very difficult for him as well, because in his mind, you know, he kind of is Trip and he wants to continue living and he's in a different body now. But if he has so many of those memories, he must kind of feel like he is still Trip Tucker and is still alive.
Yeah, you know, I think that the interesting part about this is that having Sim have these memories also combine with his own memories, you know, of growing up. And, mm-hmm. you know, the relationships that he creates with Phlox and with Hoshi and, you know, with all of these people. And, you know, he goes through an entire lifetime of this, I'm, you know, baby and a child and a middle schooler and a high schooler and then an adult in such a small amount of time. And so then mm-hmm. relationally, the people around you having to catch up with that and then treat you different every, you know, hour, it seems like.
Yeah.
Is such an interesting experience for him. But I loved that we dove into that because I thought that that made the episode much more internally consistent in the sense that, okay, we're regardless of how he has Tripp's memories, he's got Tripp's memories, but we also allow him to have his own sense of being. And then figuring out between himself what's him and what's Tripp becomes very difficult. And I just love that ambiguity. And so I just, you know, this was one of the places where I thought the writing on this episode was really superb because there were no easy answers, you know, and this is written by Manny Coto. You know, he mm-hmm. does such a great job here, I think.
It was his first episode on Enterprise, yeah. actually, as a writer. Yeah.
And then, you know, I think that also helps the episode with all of these performances and just the storyline in general. You know, LeVar Burton in here directing. Everybody mm-hmm. is just really doing a great job to bring this whole thing to life.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what I loved about the episode, and I think the smartest part about the episode, is there aren't any easy answers, but there does really seem like there's only one truly right answer. And mm-hmm. that's something that I think all of us in life understand, where we know the right thing that we need to do, but it's also the much harder thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is, that's a great Star Trek story. And as a future captain would say, risk is our business, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when we're going to put ourselves on the line in exploration or in a mission of this nature, you know, we have to be willing to take the ultimate risks. And when it comes to being in space and everything, the ultimate risk is that you could die at any moment, honestly.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, isn't that life in general? We don't know when we're going to die. I could drop dead right now while we're podcasting, Chris. You know, so yeah, that's just say, the way life goes.
Going to the supermarket, you never know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of everyone doing a really good job of bringing the story to life, I also want to just give props to the three young actors who played Tripp. So there's Maximilian Orion Kesmadel, who played Sim at age 4. And then when he's 8, it's Adam Taylor Gordon. And then Shane Sweet is the older Tripp when he's a teenager, so 17, before Connor finally takes over as Sim there. And I thought all these actors did a really nice job. You could tell that they studied the character. They didn't just come in and like read the lines like I'm a kid. You could tell they really studied who Tripp is, the way Connor plays the character, and then pulled that back into childhood. And I thought they did a nice job of making it very convincing that this person that we're watching rapidly grow up has all these memories and the cultural influences and all, which again, I don't yeah. know how that's passed through DNA, but anyway, that we're watching Tripp grow up. I thought they did a nice job of that.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I agree with you. I think that is one of the special things about the episode is that to do this, all of the characters playing Tripp felt like the character. They didn't feel mm-hmm. like another character. And that's really important if you're going to do this and try to make this work. And they nailed it, man. They absolutely nailed it, I thought.
Absolutely. So what's your rating for this one?
Honestly, I don't know how I couldn't give this a 5. I think this is 5 out of 5 Mimetic Symbiotes. It is a really well-crafted episode. And, you know, like we mentioned before, I think the thing that makes this so well-crafted is that it really allows us to get to know all of the characters in a much different way, in a unique way. I mean, we didn't even talk about the fun little moments where you get to see, like, Phlox be a dad and T'Pol.
Oh, right, yeah.
I mean, and Hoshi basically be a big sister.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these little moments that happen like that. And I think that's stuff too, that it's just all these little places. And this is, I think, a place where you could tell, you know, Manny Koto wrote this episode. And if you were paying attention, the dude knew his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, when you get to the fourth season, that things go so well.
Mm-hmm.
And so because, the guy's just on fire, his first episode. Come on, mm-hmm. man. Come on.
All right. Well, I think I've said everything that I want to say about the episode. Would mention, again, this is Manny Koto's first script for Enterprise. And also the music for this episode won an Emmy Award, actually, for the Outstanding Music Composition for a Series. Composer is Velton Ray Bunch. So that was back in 2004. And that's something that I think we don't remember about this episode, actually, that it's one of the ones that grabbed an Emmy for music. But I'm going to give this episode 10 stages of growing up, you know, from bottles to diapers to teething to that first slice of key lime pie, mm-hmm. that first rejection, a kiss, all the way through. It's a great episode.
Love it.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Similitude as well. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me right there. Of course, you can also send us email if you like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5. And that will come to us from the expanse right over into our normal space here on Earth. And also, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not figuring out what you're going to clone with your own Lassarian desert larva, where can people find you?
Oh, goodness. Well, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, I'm here on the network doing the 602 Club. So we talk about all of our favorite franchises outside of Star Trek. So hope you check that out. And over on the Nerd Party Network, you can find me with a couple of shows. One is called Outpost. Talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then I'm doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, where we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, if people wanted to just catch up with you and see what, you know, your other clones are doing, who are doing all the work for you so you don't have to, where can people find you?
I wish I had that. I need to buy like a 6-pack of these desert larvae. get through my work more easily. When I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you, of course. Also, Larry Nemechek and I finally, after more than 3 years, we recorded a new episode of The Ready Room. We're doing a recap, a look back at season 3 of Strange New Worlds. So that should probably be out by the time this drops, but if not, it will be soon. So you can catch that. And of course, you can find me in the back catalog on lots and lots of shows over the last 14, 15 years. So check those out if you're interested in more of my thoughts. And of course, you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can find me in all the different places. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, We could definitely use your help to find out how to support the network. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is helping us now. Well, Matthew, I hope you're ready. Let's hop into the DeLorean because we're going back in time next week, back to Detroit in 2004 for a quick ride down Carpenter Street.
Well, Chris, I can't wait, so let's go.